Welcome, everyone, to the Instructional Leadership Show. I'm your host, Justin Bader, and this is episode 29, The Impact of Frequent, Consistent Classroom Visits. If you are tuning in live here on Facebook or listening to the podcast version in our member dashboard, welcome. It is our purpose on the Instructional Leadership Show every week to help you confidently get into classrooms every day, have feedback conversations that change teacher practice, and discover your best opportunities for school improvement. And this month in the Instructional Leadership Association, we're focused on stage 5 of our roadmap for instructional leaders, which we call the High Performance Instructional Leadership Roadmap. The 5th stage of the roadmap is called 500 Classrooms. Get consistent and impactful. And we call it the 500 classroom stage because by this point in the year, you can tell if you're on track to visit classrooms 500 times this year. All it takes to get into classrooms 500 times a year, my friend, is 3 visits a day. If you have 180 days in the school year and you visit classrooms 3 times a day, that's going to give you more than enough opportunities to get into classrooms a total of 500 times. Now, we know that's difficult. We know that it is something that not many people pull off, but every year, numerous people write to us and say, hey, I did it. You know, it's June and I've been in classrooms 532 times or 507 times. And I want you to know that you can do that as well. There are some dependencies. There are some kind of first things, first factors to consider. So to provide you with a copy of the entire rubric and to help you figure out where to focus first so that you don't just throw yourself into that pace of 500 classroom visits a year and then run into some problems, we've developed a self-assessment called the Instructional Leadership Self-Assessment. And you can take that at principalcenter.com/ILSA, and that'll help you identify any maybe productivity challenges or challenges with the nature of the feedback conversations that you're having that may be interfering with your ability to keep pace with those 3 classroom visits a day. So do check that out. If you're not currently on pace to visit 500 classrooms a year, I want to get you up to that speed, up to that pace, so that you can see the benefits that we're going to talk about today. So in the rubric, I want to zoom in on that 500 classrooms column here and just look from top to bottom, level 1 through level 4. What does instructional leadership practice look like at each of these 4 levels of performance? And of course, level 1 is the lowest. It's at the top, but it's the lowest level of our rubric. Level 1 practice is something like this. I'm afraid to visit classrooms because I don't know what I'll see, and neither teachers nor students expect to see me. This is where most people are, right? This is what most instructional leaders do, is kind of avoid getting into classrooms except for those required formal observations. It's intimidating to start. It's uncomfortable for teachers and students the first time. They might stand up and say, oh, wait, what are you doing here? And there's this kind of awkwardness that we have to get through. But if that's where you are, I want to encourage you to be honest with that, but also to know that there is a path forward. Level 2 is typically where people are when they seek out the Principal Center, when they seek out my book, the strategies that I share for getting into classrooms on a consistent basis. So level 2, a lot of you know, people who are dedicated and committed to growing as instructional leaders are right here at level 2. I get into classrooms as I'm able, but I'm often thrown off track by having to deal with unpleasant surprises, and my visits still catch teachers and students off guard. And personally, this was where I was for many years. I would try my best, I would really want to get into classrooms, but I just hadn't quite figured out the systems and the strategies and the philosophies that I needed to really get clear on what I was going into classrooms to do, because that's a big part of it, and how I was going to actually make it manageable and make it sustainable for myself. So again, that's where a lot of people are when they come to us. Level 3 is where we want to get you very quickly. And typically within a couple of weeks of going through my book, going through the Instructional Leadership Challenge, we can get you to this point. Level 3 is I visit 3 classrooms a day, every day. So teachers and students are used to seeing me, and my feedback conversations are having an impact on teacher practice. That is where we want you to be very quickly so that you can start to see the benefits that we're going to talk about, and ultimately so that you can move on to level 4, which, you know, this is rare. This is not the norm in our profession, but this is what happens when you're consistent over time. And some of our favorite members at the Principal Center write back to us all the time and hop in on our live shows and webinars because they're seeing these benefits and they want to stay strong. They want to stay at this level. And level four is teachers and students expect to see me in classrooms, and I can see the impact it's having on students and on teacher practice in specific areas of our instructional framework. See, here's what happens, my friends, when you get into classrooms consistently over time and you dedicate yourself to having an impact on instruction. You start to get very, very specific about the instruction that's taking place in your school. You start to get into the details of the work that teachers are doing. And you don't just give feedback on things like, oh, how many students raised their hand, or what's the engagement like, or did you ask higher order questions? Those kind of surface things that are easy to observe, that apply pretty much to every classroom, that are easy for administrators to give feedback on, you start to move beyond those. When you get into classrooms 500 times a year and sustain that habit over the long term, you start to get into the real nitty-gritty of the work that teachers are doing so that you can move that work forward. You can move it forward by supporting teachers, by clearing the way, by providing the resources they need, by running interference with the district and with parents so that teachers can stay on track with that work, and so that everyone is within a department or a team is on the same page and working toward the same goals. So people are learning from one another, they're sharing common practices and common assessments and looking at assessments together. Like, ultimately, that's where we want to be, right? So we want to be in the thick of teaching and learning. We don't want to keep those details of the really important work that teachers are doing at arm's length. We don't want to let them shut the classroom door and we stay in the office and they stay in classrooms and we just kind of talk once a month at faculty meetings. That's not what instructional leadership should be or can be. When we get into classrooms, we can see so much more happening. So what I would like to share with you now is 10 things that get better with frequent, consistent classroom visits. When you make a habit of this, when you make that habit stick long-term and you get yourself into classrooms every single day, here are 10 things that get better. Now, some of these are good things and some of these are bad things. So the good things get better and the bad things get less frequent or less problematic. So go with me as we explore these 10 benefits of getting into classrooms frequently and consistently. Number 10 is teacher conscientiousness, or what Kim Marshall calls keeping teachers on their toes. You know, if you've ever walked into a classroom and you see somebody at their desk and they hop up and they're like, oh yeah, I'm teaching. They put the newspaper down. Maybe you've had a sub do that and you think, oh, I'm glad I stopped by if this is what's going on. You know, you probably don't have a lot of that in your school, but I think just the general sense of conscientiousness that teachers have is directly related to how much they expect to see you in classrooms, right? If you are in classrooms constantly, there's not really going to be any room for kicking your feet up and reading a newspaper during class. That kind of thing, you know, again, probably is not a big problem, but, you know, people go the extra mile when they know you're paying attention, and not in a snoopy way, not in a micromanagey kind of way, but knowing that you care enough to pay attention makes a huge difference in people's conscientiousness and effort. Even people who are, you know, as a baseline, very strong. Just that attention from leaders makes a difference. Number 9, interruptions. You will find, this is a little bit of a paradox here, but I think a lot of the time that we spend in classrooms gets recaptured by improvements elsewhere. And one of the biggest improvements is a reduction in those got a minute interruptions. You know, if you get trapped in the office, if one person traps you in the office and another person stops by because they need to ask you something, then a line starts to form, it's going to be very difficult to get out of the office and get into classrooms. So the interruption opportunity goes down when you are in classrooms and out of the office. And you also have the opportunity to see more people on the way to and from classroom. So like if you were in somebody's classroom this morning, chances are they had a chance to run their issue by you then, and they don't have to come and seek you out. If they know you're gonna be out and about in the building throughout the day, you might even be in their classroom, the need to track you down and interrupt you is going to cut down. And when it comes to maybe people who don't really need your time, like if you have salespeople in the office, or if you have parents who just wanna bend your ear and use you as their personal therapist, if you're not in the office, if you are in classrooms, a lot of them will just not bother. They're not gonna send you an email, they're not gonna make an appointment, they'll just be like, nah, it's all right, and they will leave you alone. So you will have fewer interruptions. Number 8, student discipline. Now, this is a big one for assistant principals. If you are worried that you're so busy with discipline that you can't possibly make time to get into classrooms, we had a Principal Center radio guest a while back named Sam. Sam was an assistant principal, did, you know, most of the discipline in his school, and he found that when he got really serious about getting into classrooms, and I think one year he got into classrooms over 1,000 times in his middle school, he found that kids just kind of didn't bother getting in trouble as much anymore, because they knew there was a good chance that he was just going to catch them in the act, because he was going to be in their classroom so much, and there was just a deterrent effect, a preventative effect from being in classrooms so much. And, you know, you can see what's going on in the class. You can maybe get a handle on the difficulties that a kid and a teacher are having and work with them proactively on that. So student discipline can get a lot better. And that alone can provide a lot of the time that you will ultimately spend on those classroom visits. Number 7 of our 10 things that get better with frequent, consistent classroom visits is email. Now, this has a couple of paradoxes to it. How could your email inbox possibly get better if you're spending less time in the office and more time in classrooms? Well, a couple of things have to happen here, and we have specific sections on this in my book and in the Instructional Leadership Challenge. First of all, you get better in terms of your email habits. You get current faster, you don't click and scroll and pick and go around randomly, but you get disciplined and systematic about how you handle your email. And because you are disciplined and systematic and you follow through on email, more people email you things that you should be emailed about instead of bugging you about them in person. And if you also route people to email, say, don't text me, don't call me on the radio unless you really need me for an emergency, shoot me an email and I will get back to you. When you start to tighten up how you do email, other people will start to trust that as the way to get something from you, to get your help with a problem. If they know, okay, I'm not going to get an answer back from him in 2 minutes. I mean, it's going to be, mid-morning or something before I get an answer back from Justin, but I am going to get an answer back. I'm going to get my problem solved. You know, Justin might come to my room and talk to me in person, but this is going to get dealt with if I send an email. What happens there is email is allowed to do its job, and all of those other ways of interrupting us on the radio or text messages or in person start to fade away. So email can do its job as an asynchronous communication tool. Number 6, you will find that the more you are in classrooms, the fewer parent complaints you get because they can't find you, but B, the more you are able to respond productively to teacher complaints. If a teacher comes and says, hey, my kid said that in this class they're not doing anything, and I'm really upset that my kid's teacher's not having them do anything in their class. Well, if you have not been in that class very much, what are you going to have to do? You're going to have to go investigate, talk to the teacher, sit in a little bit, see what they've been up to. But if you've been in that class 5 or 10 times already, you are already prepared to respond to that parent complaint. And you can tell the parent, look, I'm in that class twice a month at least, sometimes every single week, and I can tell you exactly what they're working on. I was in there last week, and here's what I saw. If you would like, I can get some more information from the teacher about what they're working on, but I can assure you, based on my firsthand observation, that they are not doing nothing in that class. So whatever the parent complaint is, if you have been in the room, if you have seen that class firsthand, you are prepared. You don't even have to go and check with the teacher in a lot of cases. You are prepared to speak to that complaint because of your firsthand experience. Number 5, feedback quality. The quality of the feedback that you are able to provide to teachers when you are in their classrooms frequently goes way, 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 way up. And primarily, that's because you have context. You have a sense of what the teacher is doing, of where they're going in the curriculum, of how their students normally behave. And if you see some kind of off-task behavior and you know that kid, you know they've got a behavior plan, they're working it, then you're going to be focused on just what the teacher can do to get better. And you're not going to be distracted by things that are new to you and that are a surprise to you, because you already have a sense of how things are in that classroom. You just know so much more from the context that's provided by those frequent classroom visits. Number 4 of our 10 things that get better with frequent, consistent classroom visits, your formal evaluations almost write themselves. You have loads and loads of evidence, especially once you start taking notes. You just know a ton more about every teacher's practice, and you don't have to assume. You don't have to extrapolate from one formal observation and say, okay, based on these 45 minutes, how does this teacher teach for all 1,000 hours of the school year? You're not trying to do that crazy extrapolation and making all these assumptions and filling in the blanks on all of your different evaluation criteria. You have tons and tons of evidence from your informal visits. For that reason, I don't recommend that you call your classroom walkthroughs, your informal visits, whatever you call them, don't call them non-evaluative. They're not necessarily a formal part of the formal evaluation process, but I don't think we want to set the expectation that they're just completely unrelated to that process, because they give you critical context and critical evidence that can be incredibly helpful in understanding what you are seeing. More on that in the book. Number three, surprise problems. You know, if there is a classroom management issue, you know, you don't want to hear about that from the colleague down the hall who's hearing the noise from their neighbor, right? Like, you want to see that firsthand. If you, you know, hear from a parent that something is not right in their child's class, you don't want that to be the first time you've heard of it, right? You want to get a handle on that early. And the best way to do that is by being in the classroom consistently on your own, you know, making those informal visits so that nothing catches you by surprise. Number two, the professional climate gets better. Now, this one could be a little bit of a surprise, especially if teachers' initial reaction to your increased presence in classroom was not positive. If they say, hey, I'm not sure I like this. I'm going to actually check with the union and see if you're allowed to come in my classroom whenever you feel like it. And probably they'll check and then they'll find out that, yes, you are allowed to come in whenever you feel like it. You know, there are some things about the evaluation process that we have to be careful about. We don't want to make this a gotcha, because if we make it a gotcha, people are going to realize that this is worse for them. Like, the more you're in classrooms to play gotcha, the worse that is for teachers. But if you are truly there to make things better, to listen, to learn, to pay attention, to notice, to be able to support and to have feedback conversations and to truly try to understand how you can take your school to the next level, people will value that. Now, there are a few people who will not, who will say, you know what, actually, I want to be left totally alone. I'm going to move to a different school where the principal does not get into classrooms. I'm going to be left alone as much as possible. So I'm out of here. See ya. That may happen, but that will actually improve your professional climate, right? If the most negative and kind of isolationist people leave, great. You get to hire amazing people who want to work together, who want to get better, who want to talk about practice with you and their colleagues, and who care about student learning. And over time, the awareness of what's going on in every classroom allows you to be a connector, to be a cheerleader for the great work that your teachers are doing, to be a team builder, and to really help people collaborate and get better. So professional climate is our second to last and our final benefit of getting into classrooms frequently and consistently is those individual professional relationships. You have a professional relationship with every teacher and with every student. And I think it's important that we acknowledge that that is a professional relationship with students. They see you in a professional context, and it's so powerful when they see you in the classroom, not just in the lunchroom. You're not just the principal in the office for when they get in trouble. You're not just there at the buses. You are actually the lead learner in the classroom alongside them, learning how you can lead your school to higher levels of effectiveness. So that presence, that engagement, that involvement in the work that teachers and students are doing builds those relationships powerfully. So I hope the benefits are abundantly clear to getting into classrooms frequently and consistently. Three a day, three classroom visits a day is really all it takes. 5, 10, 15 minutes each at most. A small fraction of your day is really all it takes to see all of these benefits. And if you are not on track right now, it is okay. It is early November when we're recording this episode. And if you are not on track, you know, even if you're watching this in early May and you think we only have a couple weeks of school left, there is never a bad time to start getting into classrooms. The best time is, you know, your very first day on the job, but the second best time is today. Start getting into classrooms. And here are some resources that can help. And you'll find these in your members dashboard. You should have a login to that if you are a member. First of all, I recommend going through the Instructional Leadership Challenge. This is our quick start video program. It's very, very fast. The last couple of modules are just a couple of videos each. But early on, we talk about getting current and getting into classrooms. That's the productivity side of, you know, getting your work under control enough that you can step away from the office. You know, things are not going to fall apart. It's not going to be total chaos if you step out of the office and go get into classrooms. just feeling that it's doable, feeling that it's manageable, knowing that you can get into classrooms and it will be okay. You will get through the day. Everybody else will get through the day. Nothing bad will happen. That's what we guide you through in the early modules of the challenge, especially module one and module two. And then in module three, we start to talk about the feedback conversations and how to set those up in a way that's actually beneficial, enjoyable, and sustainable. So I definitely recommend, if you're a member, definitely recommend going through the Instructional Leadership Challenge and then listening to the audiobook of Now We're Talking, 21 Days to High Performance Instructional Leadership. And if you're a member, we should have sent you the hard copy already. If you don't have the hard copy or for some reason can't access the audiobook, please reach out and our customer support team will get you hooked up with whatever you need. And if for some reason you are not a member of the Instructional Leadership Association and you're coming across this on Facebook, I want you to know that we do this every week. We have a new episode of the Instructional Leadership Show every week. We make it available as a podcast, as a video podcast. We give you the slides. And every week we add a little bit more, a different nuance, a different layer to these practices. And every episode of the show is organized according to a monthly theme. And you can access all past episodes of the Instructional Leadership Show when you become a member at principalcenter.com/join. And you'll find out on that page whether registration is open at that particular time or not. But we organize everything around these six stages that you've seen in the instructional, the High Performance Instructional Leadership Roadmap. And you can learn more about the association at principalcenter.com/join. If it's just you, that's the place to go. If you have an admin team, I want to encourage you to check out our Navigator school level membership. And if you represent a district, if you're a principal supervisor, assistant superintendent, superintendent, head of school, I want to encourage you to check out our Instructional Leadership Directors Roundtable, which also has special events and support for principal supervisors. So I work directly in a development capacity with instructional leadership directors who are in the roundtable program. But feel free to check out any of those. If you are a member, you will find everything you need at dashboard.principalcenter.com. And we have just a very easy login process there. Just put in your email and we'll send you a one-click login link so that you can access that audiobook, the Instructional Leadership Challenge. I would recommend doing the challenge first and then going through the audiobook if you want to make some progress on getting into classrooms, getting yourself into that habit of visiting classrooms 500 times a year. All right, that is what I have for you today. This has been episode 29 of the Instructional Leadership Show. I'm Justin Bader, and I will see you next time. Thanks so much.